Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Liam Maitland, KCBS Foodie Chap. At Cote West in Oakland, we are talking wine. With me is Brett Hogan. Brett, good to see you, mate. How are you? Good to see you.
Thanks for coming.
I see wine. My favorite sound is the sound we're about to hear, because you're going to pop this beauty open. As you pour, tell us, what are you drinking?
All right. So first, we're going to start off with a Pet Nat, which is short for Petiton Naturel. It's a sparkling wine. It's kind of like a rustic champagne. It's made here in-house. It's a very labor-intensive wine.
I've got to get the sound here, just because it is my favorite sound. Here we go. Yes. What drew you to this?
They're very popular, and so I thought it'd be good to introduce to our lineup. Pet Nat is kind of like where rosé was maybe 10 years ago.
Sure.
And they're just delicious.
Yeah. I'm a fan. Cheers to you, my friend. Here we go. Oh, yeah. That's a gift from the gods right there. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your journey in wine. Where did this passion begin?
It was kind of a long trajectory to get here.
I got to be nowhere until 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Okay, all right. I'll give you the long version. So I had spent some time in Europe when I was a young adult. I was exposed to wine and various wine countries, but I had no idea I wanted to make wine until later in life. I ended up working in basically the tech world. Mm-hmm. I was a sales manager for a tech company. And it was really fun in the beginning. The company was young and enthusiastic, and everything was exciting, very fast-paced. Everyone was young and smart, and I liked it a lot. I lasted 7 years there. The first five, I would say, were like...
Were you drinking wine along the way to help you get through those 7 years?
At the end of the day, certainly, yeah. And I still had no idea I wanted to work in wine, but my passion for that line of work started to dwindle towards the end. And so, and I was working for Google, and Google was a fantastic employer. So sure. I knew that it wasn't the employer, it was probably the industry that I was not really enjoying. Sure. So I did a lot of soul searching. My wife helped me out with that too, kind of helped me think about what
and
was important.
And your wife, Carrie, is a part owner here. You are partners in the business, right?
Yeah, we own the business 50-50.
Does that mean you also drink 50-50?
We drink a lot of Cote West at home. Yes.
So what was it? Was there a moment for you? Was there a light bulb moment where you thought, this is my passion, this is what I want to do, I want to make wine? What happened?
It wasn't so obvious right from the start, but at the time, when I was considering other careers, I used to homebrew in my kitchen and garage, and there was something about that where I would make a physical, tangible product with my hands and share it with people I knew and see them get enjoyment out of it, and that was very fulfilling. So as I was kind of going through this thought process of what is meaningful to me and what would I like to do with my time, I thought a lot about that, and I thought if I could do something like that for a job, that'd be wonderful. And I also realized, hey, I live in California. Some people actually make wine here, and it's a real robust industry.
And people like wine here, so there's a market for it.
Yeah, and so I actually considered beer making. I met with some brewers and realized that industry was not hardly as interesting as the wine industry. I hadn't made wine at that time, so I started tinkering with that in my garage, making, you know, like, what, 5-6 cases at a time.
Sure.
And it actually kind of turned out. And to make a long story short, I applied for the graduate program at UC Davis in viticulture and enology. I was accepted, so I quit my job.
Back to school.
I was a slightly older student, so that was a little awkward at first, kind of a rough transition.
But you had your eye on the prize, so at the end of this, hopefully, if it all works out, you get to make wine and get to make a living following your passion.
That's right. And it was a fantastic program. I had a wonderful thesis advisor, Hildegard Heyman, and I met great colleagues there, many of whom I still speak with today. When, you know, issues come up, you don't know how to solve them. You can open textbooks, but sometimes it's just better to get on the phone.
Pick up the phone, talk to someone who knows what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
So were there particular styles of wine, flavors, regions, when, you know, as you were going on your own personal wine adventure, was it French? Was it Spanish? Was it Italian? Was it California? What were you drinking and what were you loving?
Yeah, so at first it was mostly Californian. And then as I became more interested in wine, my palate definitely leaned more towards old world style wines. Mm-hmm. I pretty much gave up Chardonnay entirely. I became an ABC drinker, wow. anything but Chardonnay. But I have had some experiences which have completely reversed course on that.
Good. And you have some Chardonnay on your tasty menu.
That's right.
So let's talk about your first year in business making wine. What were your expectations and how did that go?
So I was fortunate to receive a fellowship as a grad student at UC Davis. Yeah. And so I was working with Comte Lafond in Meursault in Burgundy. When I came back from that experience, I came back to the Bay Area and I was fortunate to receive a job at Dogpatch Wineworks in San Francisco.
Yeah. Great spot.
It was a great spot. It was really well equipped. But the owner of the business there allowed me to make a small bit of wine on the side as a kind of a perk of employment. Mm-hmm. And that's how Cote West got started.
That's not a bad perk, right?
It sweetened the salary offering, let's say that.
Yeah. And it led to this.
Yes, it did. So Cote West was made there. I did all the work. I bought all the barrels and the grapes, but I'd paid no production costs. So it was a great way for me to build up a little bit of inventory while I still had a full-time job before I made the leap to do this, 100% Cote West.
So the name, Cote West, what's behind it?
So that experience I alluded to before, working in Burgundy, the Cote d'Or is the... the slopes, they're called the Golden Slopes that run north south through Burgundy that have all the famous Grand Cru and Premier Cru vineyards. Yeah. My experience there was very eye opening, so I decided it would be really a waste to not try to recreate what I had learned there using the techniques learned on the Cote d'Or, but with West Coast vineyard sources. Yeah. So Cote West is an attempt to make old world style wines, but here in California with West Coast vineyard sources.
And of all places, you would end up in the 510 East Bay. Why this spot is a perfect place to store? I know your grapes are yielded from other places, but this is where you're making your wine.
So my wife and I have lived in Oakland for quite a while now, and it seemed challenging to envision us actually living in wine country. We have two kids. We really wanted them to go to like good public schools if we could make that happen. And I think we really like the density of living in a city.
Yeah.
And as much as I like going to the country, I'm not so sure that's like the best for our family to live out there.
Sure. And more, you're hearing more stories about Oakland winemakers.
That's true.
Yeah.
There is a somewhat long history of that happening. Yeah. Kent Rosenblum, I believe, was one of the first the pioneer of that. So we think we owe a lot of gratitude to him. But at the same time, some of them are leaving. There used to be more here in Oakland. Now there's only two fully functional wineries. Not talking about tasting rooms. I'm talking production facilities in Oakland. It's Cote West and 2 Mile Wines.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have been kind of priced out of the market. Unfortunately, real estate and rent is going up.
Sure,
so and you need a lot of space to make wine. So winemakers are kind of being pushed to more marginalized spots.
So let's talk about the grapes. Where do you source your grapes from?
Mostly from Sonoma, different AVAs within Sonoma. So Russian River Valley, Dry Creek Valley, Sonoma Coast. That's where we get the bulk of our grapes. A little bit from Napa, and then some other spots that are less well known but have like fantastic potential, such as Contra Costa. Believe it or not, a wonderful place.
Wow,
Zinfandel.
Yeah, Zin Country. So when you decided what grapes you were going to yield, what wine you're going to make, what was immediately on your list? I mean, of course, we've been drinking the Pet Nat, but your top five, did you want to be a Chardonnay winemaker, a Cab winemaker, what story were you trying to tell through the wines that you're making?
So I think it was very clear that we needed to make Chardonnay and Pinot Noir because of my experience in Burgundy. That's, white Burgundy is Chardonnay, red Burgundy is Pinot Noir. And I had just come back from a really intimate experience there. So that was very much top of the list to produce. So those are the first two wines we made. I made 2 barrels of Cabernet, 2 barrels of Chardonnay, and 2 barrels of Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So making wine, lots of lessons to be learned, some tough ones you have to make along the way. What have been the toughest things so far as part of this journey?
I think tasting your own wines that you've put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into, and they evolve over time, and sometimes they go through sort of an adolescent phase, say when they're going through malolactic fermentation, they just don't taste good. And so you're always wondering what's going to happen to this guy once it gets to the other side of this process.
Are you sweating a little bit during that process, or are you a man of faith? You just know it's going to work out all right.
Less so now. Now you know it's going to work out. But some things, we're smelling the barrels all the time. Some things you do not want to smell, and that's like vinegar-like things, because if that happens, you're probably going to have to dump that barrel.
So in terms of making sure you serve the consumer, you have a tasting room here. Folks can come here at the weekend. They can make an appointment, of course, if they want to bring a group in. So when you're deciding what to make, are you conscious of the consumer? And what is your awareness of what people are loving to drink right now in 2019?
Well, our Pet Nat has been hugely popular. You know, when they come to the tasting room, I think people generally enjoy everything we have on offer. I was afraid that when we opened this, we would only sell one product. Yeah. It would just be the rosés or just the Sauv Blanc. And I've been very delighted to see that we're selling all of the products pretty much evenly.
I have to tell you, I forgot what a delicious grape this is. I mean, this is stunning wine.
That's great. I'm glad you like it. That being said, I know, like, when we sell wine to retail shops or to restaurants, things that move faster are certainly in the lower priced items because, you know, our wines are not cheap. And, you know, some of them are splurge wines, definitely more than what my wife and I spend on a daily basis. So something that I've prided ourselves in with Cote West is delivering very high quality to price ratio. So that has certainly influenced some of the winemaking regions or grape growing regions that we've kind of looked towards once we got out of Sonoma Coast, Napa, very, very expensive. I also wanted to provide some other options, such as our we have a rosé of Zinfandel, which is phenomenal, and that's $22 a bottle. It's our least expensive thing, and it's just great.
And of course, people should just come and buy a case. They get 10% off.
That's right.
Do you have a wine club as well?
We do have a wine club. Yep, it's 6 bottles or 12 bottles 2 times a year. And the prices of those are roughly $170 or $320.
You don't have to sell me. I'm sold. Done. Sign me up. Let's taste our next little beauty. I hate to say goodbye to this because it's so darn good. We have a dumping bucket, which happens to be my mouth. That is so good.
I would go to Sauvignon Blanc next, unless if we're short on time, I'll skip straight to the rosé.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is your journey, so wherever you want to go. We have time.
Sauvignon Blanc. This is a very traditional still Sauvignon Blanc. This one is fermented in 100% stainless steel. Once it goes dry, I move it to different vessels. 80% stays in stainless steel. 20% goes to neutral French oak. Mm-hmm. By neutral, that means the barrels have been used for 5 years or more, and it's not really imparting any oakiness or any oak attributes to the wine. But it breathes differently than the stainless steel. So what stays in stainless is all about citrus. It's a lot of grapefruit, lime. But then the smaller portion that's in neutral French oak softens up a little bit, and you start to take on some tropical notes like melon, honey, honeysuckle.
There's a little whisper of them on the nose.
Then you blend it together before bottling, and you get a much more complex Sauvignon Blanc.
I never drink alone. Cheers, my friend.
Cheers.
Here we go. Folks, you've just joined us, Cote West. We're talking wine. Yes, we are. This is the Pine Mountain Cloverdale Peak Sauvignon Blanc. Oh, my Lord. That is light and crisp, fruity, and another gift from the gods right there. That's your perfect summer day glass of wine, right? Mm-hmm. Any day glass of wine, really, if you think about it. Folks are probably wondering, where can we find you? If folks want to come and do a tasting, go online, of course. But where are we exactly?
Where's this location?
Yeah,
we're in Embarcadero Cove, so we're only one large block off of the water.
Yeah,
we're close to Quinn's Lighthouse or Harborside. Many people know Harborside.
Yeah,
it's a very industrial area. It actually has an interesting history. There used to be a lot of food production here. Mm-hmm. Back around World War II, supposedly, this area was deemed a strategic place for food production because of all the transit lines, the waterways, the railways, and the interstate.
Makes sense. Today, some other stuff being created here, cultivated here. A lot of green.
I'm sorry?
A lot of green being cultivated.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. We are very close to the green belt, so supposedly there's...
What are you talking about, man? Are you talking code?
Yes. But there's, you know, some of the food production, like right across the street there, that big white building, they do massive amounts of olive oil. There's a mill still here. There used to be a lot of canning here.
Yeah.
But the city of Oakland wants to keep the historic connection to food production here. So when I applied for my permit here, they very much embraced the fact that we are a small artisanal winemaker.
Yeah.
And they recognize that the food production and wine... beverage production is moving out of the big commercial production and it's becoming more small, local, artisanal.
Yeah. And there's some wine history here in this building. Brett, you're not the first winemaker to be here, right?
That's right. This place has been a winery for 17 years, and I'm the third winemaker here.
Yeah. Well, let's hope your tenure here is a little longer. Shall we move into our last wine? It's Rosé All Day. Tell us all about it.
This is a rosé of Coonoise from Dry Creek Valley. Coonoise is kind of an obscure variety, at least in California. But in the south of France, it's used quite readily for rosé. It's a wonderful grape for rosé because it's thin-skinned, low pigment, low tannin, but it's high acid, has great floral notes, and it's got a ton of fruit. It preserves its acidity, yet it's got a robust body, mouthfeel, texture. So it's an incredibly versatile wine when you consider food pairings.
And... it just appears everyone on the planet appears to love rosé these days.
It's true. Yeah. People like rosé so much that in 2018, we decided to make three different rosés. We continued making our rosé of Coonoise. We added a rosé of Grenache and a rosé of Zinfandel.
So a bottle of your rosé, for those who want to come and enjoy, is how much?
$25 for the rosé of Coonoise and the rosé of Grenache, whereas the rosé of Zinfandel is $22.
Yeah. Well, just again, just get a case.
Why not? You get 10% off.
Here we go. Cheers, my friend.
Cheers.
The rosé. Here we go. Yes. That is a fine rosé. Mm-hmm. You have to love your wines, but are there ever moments where you don't love something you've created?
No, I am very fortunate that I actually like my wines. I've always wondered what winemakers would do in the scenario where they're in charge of wine production for wines that they don't love. That must be challenging, but fortunately I'm not in that.
Well, you fell in love again with Chardonnay.
I did. Yeah, and it was all from what I learned at Comte Lafond in Meursault, making very different Chardonnays.
Parlez-vous français, monsieur?
Je parle un peu français.
Je parle français un peu.
Ah, c'est bien.
We're going to end it right there because it'll get awkward. Looking to the future, how many varietals are you working with right now?
We're currently working with about 10 different vineyard sources.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of products because we're a small winery. We're only producing 1,500 cases a year.
And there's two of you.
There's two of us. It's me full-time, and Michael McCullough is our assistant winemaker, who outside of harvest is full-time at Verjus. He's a sommelier there.
Yeah.
But we managed to produce all the wines between the two of us.
I know you're a family man. You've got a couple of little ones. Have you put them to work yet?
Not yet, but I can't wait till they get old enough where they can do something of value here.
So finally, for those who've never been here, why should they come and visit? When can they visit? And where will they find you?
People should come find us on Saturday or Sunday from 2 to 6. They should come because the wines are excellent and the prices are fantastic given the quality of the wines.
Well, I'll second that. Brett Hogan, the winemaker, Cote West, the winery. We're going to share the wine notes with you, tell you more about your story at kcbsradio.com and click on Foodie Chap. Cheers, my friend. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.